And it's good to see you, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Same for you, John. And thanks for having me.
Happy New Year to you. You, I think it was in this room or maybe the other studio, you taught me everything I know these days. Because we get a lot of questions about wills and trusts and the differences and all that. You and your wife who taught me all of it originally many years ago, I'm glad you're here to help our listeners out again. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
And it's a good time of year. There's never a bad time. But how many years have people put on the top of the to-do list, estate planning? How many times does November or December come around and they haven't done it yet? Then it's the holidays. Then there's that excuse. We are now halfway through January already. How about January, February, March, this first quarter, people put a focus on the estate plan?
Well, you can't go outside, so it's a good time to do it. And it doesn't really take a ton. You know, just put put an hour into it. You know, you take care of 90% of it.
That's actually huge to hear, because I think some people find it so potentially daunting or hypothetically daunting that they don't want to take that first step.
Right. It seems like it's going to be this giant effort that you're going to have to put forth. But really, it's a stitch in time saves nine. You know, mm-hmm. if you do this up front, you're going to cover most of the problems. And I see a lot of clients come in and they're like, that's it? Like, that's all I got to do? Like, yeah, you just need this stack of paper. Mm-hmm. There's a few behind the scenes things that we have to do for them, obviously, you know, getting houses put into trust, all that kind of stuff. But, you just get a basic estate plan covers all the crazy scenarios about widows and widowers getting thrown out of their own houses and, you know, all these things that pop up on occasion. But you can take care of it all pretty easily.
I know if I say the first step, they're going to say to contact you, which of course is great, and we'll make sure people know how to do that. But maybe even before that, what things should people start to be thinking about before they even call you? Should they start rounding up some bank documents, or should they just literally just wait to talk to you and you're going to outline what their first, second, and third step is?
Well, we generally send them a form that kind of helps them figure out what it is they have. Like, what are your assets? Now, even things that you've got a mortgage on, you know, that's something that's going to get paid eventually. So mm-hmm. what assets do you have? And most people probably start to add up and it's like, oh, geez, you know, you forget a couple. Like, you forget you have life insurance. Yeah, but, you know, so we help people remember that.
There's a Roth IRA that you haven't put in for a while, but it's sitting there.
It's still there, right. So, you know, that's the first step. What do you have? And then, you know, sort of the big question, what do you want to do with it? We're all different, and all of our families look different, and all, you know, everything. We've got adult kids, we've got, you know, minor children, you know, whatever it is. Just think about that for 10 seconds.
Well, that's a great point, because I wonder if a lot of people get stuck on that one, where when you ask them, what do you want to do with it, they haven't thought about it yet. Maybe people should start thinking about where they want it to go, and then when they start finding out they have a vision for what they want their estate to go, that can be the impetus to call someone like you.
Sure.
Maybe we should start thinking about, I've built this up. I've done this. I've worked hard. I have this house. I have these savings. Here's my family. Here's how I want it distributed. Here's some charities I like. Maybe that can be the inspiration for someone to call you, because now that they have an idea of where they want it to go, now you're the one to help them figure out how it happens.
Sure. And if a person gets stuck because, you know, I don't know exactly what I want to do, I'm not exactly sure, I always just try to say that there's two approaches to estate planning and probably a million other things. You know, there's finding the perfect answer that's gonna be absolutely perfect in 40 years. But, you know, if we can't think of that one, let's think about what's right in front of us. What would happen tomorrow if I got hit by a bus? What would I want to happen? You know, and then we'll focus on that. And then as we go through life, then we can change it later.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. We all think of it as down the road, and hopefully it is. And
right.
Very likely it will be down the road, and that's great. But maybe it's when it's so far in the future, it's almost impossible to wrap your head around. So by saying, hey, this is tomorrow, you're kind of bringing it up to the forefront. And then someone goes, well, actually, if it's tomorrow, it's this person, and this person.
Right. You know, our immediate needs are generally different than our future needs.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the big differences when someone asks, undoubtedly they do because it's confusing, the difference between a will and a trust. A will, as far as I understand, it's like the Polaroid picture you take in this moment. Mm-hmm. The trust is a box that has a lot of rules and stipulations and game plans for what could happen in the future. They're two very different documents.
Right. You know, a will is always valuable, you know, because if you have to go through probate, then you get to decide where your things go. if you don't have a will and you'll go through probate, you know, the laws of intestacy are applied. And, you know, that may not be what you want. Like, and there's all kinds of oddities that come through intestacy. So
what's that word, intestacy?
Yeah, meaning you died intestate, meaning you didn't have a will, you didn't have testimony, you didn't have a testate probate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a big
lot of words. You got to be careful when you say it, John.
That's true.
They're really close to a bunch of other words. Yeah. So
well, I'm not a professional like you.
No, so. You're good. Wait, say it again.
Intestacy.
Okay, intestacy. Mm-hmm.
So it's just a big chart.
Yeah.
It just says how you're related to everyone. This is, you know, this is what gets applied when there's you know, no immediate family. And then, you know, then we look at cousins, and you know, it's like kind of the plot line to like a few movies over the years, like. Hey, do you remember your great-great uncle John? And they're like, no, I didn't even know him. Well, he left you $1 million. So, you know,
and then the opening credits roll and it's a rom-com about
right.
that. Yeah, exactly.
So that does happen.
Right.
I haven't had it happen to me yet, but that's why I answer the phone every time someone calls, because it could be that call.
Right, but make sure you always double-check what money's coming to you for real. 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you got questions for John Heggie. I've got a bunch of them, and we'll keep on asking, but I know people have estate planning questions. 312-981-7200. In fact, the 630 just chimed in. I do have my power of attorney and trust in order, but now with the right to die, do I need to have anything written up and added to my power of attorney for health, or is that a determination with my doctor and I? What a great question with the new law. Do you know anything about how that applies? It's still a decision between you and your doctor, right?
Yeah. So Illinois, the most you can do with an attorney in regard to that is just state your preference in terms of being kept alive artificially forever and ever or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you do with attorney. Everything else is with a doctor.
So right to die is with the doctor. Yeah. In fact, they wrote the law that you have to be of sound mind. The doctor knows it. So this is that will never be, at least as of right now, a decision a family member can make for you.
Correct.
Great question, though. 312-981-7200. Keep them coming. We just had one the other day when you were on Your Money Matters, and then someone texted in something similar right as you were getting off the air. And I tried to explain it, but I think a lot of people think I can get this TODI, this transfer and death instrument for my my house.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to name beneficiaries in my 401k and my IRA. What do I need you for? And that's, I think, a legit question, because I'm glad we have these vehicles, but that doesn't cover all the bases, does it?
Well, it covers an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, generally our main goal is to avoid probate, just because probate's expensive, takes a really long time. I get a little concerned about data mining in terms of, you know, if someone's taking information off the court documents. But, you know, it's one of those things that you have to have a lawyer to do. Like, that's by the law. And that was a law that was passed by the legislatures in Illinois, which happened to be a bunch of lawyers.
So you mean, right. So your kids are going to have to hire lawyers to figure this
right,
all out.
Exactly.
Right.
When you go through probate. So we try to avoid probate. You have a retirement account and you name a beneficiary. That's great. That'll generally help you avoid probate as long as that beneficiary is still there and is able to inherit. And it doesn't always necessarily say, like, if this person's deceased, give it to their children. So, you know, that's sort of the shortcoming of just naming a beneficiary. But it's still a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the TODI as well, you know, you probably should hire a real estate or an estate planning attorney to file that, to make sure it's filed correctly, to make sure we've got the property description correctly, all that sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that could work for someone, again, as long as that beneficiary is there. It doesn't cover any contingencies.
Ah, and, so they're all snapshots in time, just like a will is.
Yeah, but if that's what's going to work for you today, do it. I mean, it is so much better to have a TODI filed than it is to have to go through probate for a piece of real estate.
So those are kind of some great minimums you can do. If that's all you can do right now, do mm-hmm. it. But again, they're snapshots in time. In 30, 40, 50 years when you pass, is that TODI going to the person that's even alive that you still want it to go to? Are the beneficiaries in your retirement accounts? Maybe you're divorced now and you right. never updated your beneficiaries. A trust can supersede all those sorts of things.
That's right. And you could file a TODI that says, upon my death, pay it to the trustees of my trust. And that's another way. Then you can be more flexible within the trust.
We got a caller. We got Judy on the line has a question. Good afternoon, Judy. Happy Saturday.
Hi. I moved from Illinois to Tennessee in April, and I had my will and my trust and powers of attorney and everything drawn up when my husband died 13 years ago. I'm 86 now.
Wow.
And I went to a seminar here, and they said they thought that my Illinois will and trust, et cetera, would be acceptable here, that I didn't have to have them redone. But I'm just double-checking to see, is that, you know, am I okay? Nothing has changed as far as the beneficiaries or anything.
That's a great question. John, do you know specifically about Tennessee?
Yeah, so any of these documents that you draft have to be drafted in accordance with the state law where you drafted them. So it would be correct that it was an Illinois will or an Illinois trust. They will work in any of the 50 states. So if you want to change anything, then you have to change that with a Tennessee lawyer.
Okay.
No, nothing has changed.
Okay.
But I just wanted to double check.
Are you enjoying?
Are you enjoying
Tennessee, Judy?
I'm in Tennessee. I miss Chicago. I have WGN on my app, so I listen every day.
We love it.
It's cool. It's warm here. I mean, comparatively, it's in the 40s today, so that's nice. But summer is unbearable. The heat here is terrible.
Well, come on back in the summer, Judy. We'll catch a Cubs game or something.
We'll do that.
Although it's not better here always either, so you know how it is.
Well, I do. I was there for 86 years. So it's an adjustment.
All right, well, go Bears, and thanks for still listening.
Glad to be with family here.
Yeah, so. Well, you're our family here too, Judy, so we appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Very good. And that's a great common question that people have. Another one people have, a couple on the text line. I already have a trust. That lawyer doesn't do this anymore. If I want to make a couple changes, can I work with you to make a couple changes? That's a great question, John.
For sure. You can go to any attorney can help you with that. If you want to change it. And that's one of the beauties of these things. They're not set in stone, and as long as you're alive, you can always update them whenever you want for whatever reasons might, you know, circumstances changing in your life. But certainly be happy to help with that.
A little confusion on the toady. We have a toady at my mom's house. It's drawn up by a lawyer with certain heirs. Why do we need the lawyer again to settle the house upon settling and selling the house? Do you need a lawyer on the back end of things, even if you have a toady in place?
No, you generally just have to go. The beneficiaries who are named on that toady have to claim it, you know, and that's something you do with the recorder of deeds office, where you prove that your mother is now deceased, which is you know, unfortunate, and then the new owners automatically go into place.
Okay, great question from the 630. John, my wife and I have a revocable living trust and will for 30 years. We are 70 years old now. Obviously, laws and conditions change. How often should we update the trust and will? Updating often gets fairly expensive. Great question.
Right. You really only need to update your trust when your life changes. So, you know, 30 years, probably some things have changed. I think it'd probably be worth reading through it again to make sure that's what you still want to happen. But if that is, that's fine. So even if like your children go from being minors to being legal adults, you don't have to update your things to say that. It would just be, you know, that part would just be, you know, voided or, you know, muted. So, but yes, you don't really have to. I think in general, when you go into retirement, it is a pretty good time to take a second look at it. And obviously any sort of major life events.
Well, I bet some people don't remember what they even put into it. After 30 years, I'd be like, wait, what did we say we were going to do? And I know you've lined up a bunch of contingencies, but I think everything's worth a relook, right?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, what's happened is, you know, most of our industry has, you know, language evolves. So it's, you know, your trust that we're writing today are probably a little bit more readable than, you know, what they were 30 years ago, or certainly 40 or 50 years ago.
But if you have to make a change, John, can you, so you can make a change on someone else's trust, right, to fix something up. That's generally, or a refresh or whatever it may be. I mean, that's generally less expensive than a trust from the beginning of the...
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, if we're just going to change the distribution pattern or something like that, it's usually just an amendment, a couple pages.
PeggyLaw.com is the phone number, 847-272-7360. Trying to sneak in one more call before the news. You're not going anywhere. We got more time with you, though. Let's go to Sue. Hello, Sue. You're on WGN.
Hi, I have a quick question. We've had a trust for a long time, and our two children are our beneficiaries, or whatever you call it, but our daughter has since gotten married and her name's changed. Do we have to update it because of her name change?
Interesting.
No, you probably shouldn't. And you know, obviously, I can't give specific legal advice, and I don't know specifically what your trust says. So I'm a little
generally
hemmed in there, but generally, no, because in your trust, you're going to refer to your children. You generally say my daughter or my son or my child, something like that. And so, you know, they're going to be able to figure out who she is when she comes forward and says, you know, I'm Sue Johnson. I used to be Sue Smith. And then, oh, there's Sue Smith right there.
Pretty clear, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't necessarily have to. A lot of people like to do that, though, just to make it easier. And, you know, now that she is married, what do we want to do if she predeceases you? Do you want the money to go to her spouse? Do you want it to go to your other child? I mean, those kinds of decisions are worth making as well.
Yeah, so I didn't know if you – yeah, and it's like the worst thing to think of in the world. But yeah. You got to like plan out those contingencies, Sue. I don't know if you did before because I don't know if you can predetermine that. If they get married, it goes to the spouse. I don't know how it works. But, Sue, worth a look at. But it seems to be that, again, no specific advice, but generally speaking, a name change doesn't ruin the whole trust. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sue. Okay, we got to take a break. We got the news coming up. Karen, hang on the line. And John Heggie, where do you want people to reach out to you at?
So you can just call our office, 847-272-7360, or our website, heggielaw.com.
847-272-7360. John Heggie joining us, estate, trust, all sorts of things. Heggie Law Firm, 847-272-7360 is how you reach him. Because we got a lot of callers to get to, John. So you ready to power through
these?
Sounds
great.
Love this. Let's go to Joan. Actually, Karen. I promised Karen would be first. Hi, Karen. You're on WGN.
Hi, guys. Thanks Hello. For letting me ask my question.
Of course.
So my question is this TOTI instrument available to be used for a modular home?
Interesting. John, do you know the answer to that off the top of your
head? I don't for sure, but I'm thinking yes, because it has evolved. You know, it hasn't been around all that long in Illinois law, and it hasn't been a popular tool for even less amount of time. But it has evolved from, you know, only your personal residence to include commercial properties. So I would be shocked if it doesn't.
Because you don't own the land. You're paying, you know, rent on the land. You know, to the park that the modular home is in.
Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised, though, if they judge based on the construction of it.
Well, they sometimes treat it like it's a vehicle.
Well, vehicles have a version of a TOTI, too. It's not called that, but there's a version of that same process. I'll have to get a better answer for you.
We'll get a better answer for you, Karen, okay?
Okay, and how would that, like, you'll announce it on the radio?
Yeah, can we write down Karen's number, Iridian? I'll text you from the WGN line just in case you miss it. Okay, Karen?
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. Yes, thank you.
All right. And what an interesting question.
Yeah, it is. I wish I had a for sure answer on that, but I'll get one.
I could ask ChatGPT, but that's gotten me in trouble before, John. So yeah. I will leave that where it is. Karen, we'll get your number, and we'll try and figure that out. Let's go to Joan. Joan, you're on WGN. What's your question for John Heggie?
Hi, I appreciate the program. I have several great plots that are just in my name because of the contracts that I have, and some of them have like double depth that you can do. Do those need to go into a trust?
Interesting question. Can you put grave sites into a trust?
So that is, well, you can, but you know, there's a contract with that you have, and that contract probably specifies what were to happen upon your passing if you don't use it. There's, you know, it probably
has contracts.
Go ahead.
The contracts do not have anything like that. I've had them for a long time.
So it's something you own. It's a piece of property in essence. So yeah, you can certainly that, you know, our laws favor the idea of being able to pass that along to someone else.
Okay. So, John, I think so. You can always follow up with John for specifics. It's just general thoughts. But that makes sense to me, especially if it doesn't say it in the contract. If it were to say something in the contract, John, contracts are supersede whatever you want to throw in your trust. You don't get to change what contract you have with another institution, right?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. But that's a great question. All right, thanks, Joan. Let's go to Mary. Mary, what is your question?
Hi, good afternoon, John. I always love listening to your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I have a very dear friend who is putting her mom into a long-term care facility. And just want to understand, as they look through the documentation before they sign the you know, on the dotted line, should they be having an attorney look at the document? And is there a certain kind of attorney, you know, that they should be reaching out to for assistance?
That's a great question. John, what do you think?
So I would say, in general, for any time there's a contract that you're going to read and you have trouble reading it, you should get the help of someone who understands it. So I would generally say hire an attorney. In this specific kind of case, you want to find an attorney who specializes in elder law.
I've got
elder
someone,
law.
John.
Okay.
I've got someone for you, Mary. His name is Carrie Carrie Peck. If you listen,
that's
to,
what I thought.
Yeah.
You see, C-A-R-Y.
It's, I'll spell it for you. It's Carrie, K-E-R-R-Y.
K-E-R-R-Y.
And the last name is Peck, P-E-C-K.
Okay. That's what I thought. I think I've heard him on your radio
show. Yeah, he's been on with John Williams a lot, too. So,
okay.
Carrie Peck would, and his team would be able to tell you where you need to go. It's probably going to be their office. I would, for something that important, why not pay a lawyer a little bit, right? I mean, that's what I would recommend. I mean, you can't tell your friend what to do, but you can tell him John Hansen told you to do that. So
exactly, John. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a million, you guys. Stay warm.
Yeah, we will try. Go Bears.
All right. Yes. Bye-bye.
That's Mary. Great questions. Mm-hmm. I know no one loves to hire a lawyer, John Heggie.
No,
I mean, I do. You know, I'm the host of Let's Get Legal, so I'm always for it. 312-981-7200. A lot of people were questioning, how do you spell TODI? That's an acronym, Transfer on Death Instrument, so T-O-D-I. We have mentioned it a bunch, John. Is that something like the Secretary of State's Office, Recorder of Deeds? Where do I go for that?
The Cook County Recorder of Deeds, or whatever county you're in, their Recorder of Deeds website will have that.
Okay. Transfer on Death Instrument, so T-O-D-I. Got more questions for John Heggie, 312-981-7200. Get on the line now, though. Here's what's going to happen. Is at 1:56, five of you are going to call in with a question, and we'll have no more time left. So start racking your brain right now. Text it on in. Call it on in. And if you don't want to call it on the air, that's totally fine. You can follow up with John. I don't know if the office is closed Monday for MLK Day, but call next week, 847-272-7360. All right, what do I get? A, B, C, D, F?
Oh, A as always.
Oh, John, thank you very much,
perfect.
John Heggie. Okay. Let's say we get a trust. It's a box of things.
Right.
You got to put the things in it. This always gets people confused. Well, we say fund the trust, and we get a lot of callers who say, well, I'm worried. I have a trust. Did I fund it? My question, first and foremost, is we're talking about, like, naming things in the trust. So the bank account is not John Hansen. It's the trust of John Hansen or whatever we name it, right?
Right. And, you know, there's a couple of ways to do that. Generally, like, for a bank account, we might just make the trust the beneficiary, because banks don't like to change the names on accounts.
Okay.
They generally want you to close it and open a new one.
That's annoying.
Right, because you got 42 things hooked to that account, so you don't want to go through that process. So, like, in that scenario, you can just name the trust as the beneficiary. But when you have generally real estate, oftentimes we want to put that in the trust up front, particularly if there's a mortgage on it. There was a recent Illinois appeals court that affirmed a trial court decision that said when there was a couple who had gotten married and the husband had previous children from a prior relationship, and when the husband passed away, the wife wanted to take trust assets, because they did have a trust, they had done a plan, but they had never put their house into the trust. So she wanted to pay off the mortgage with the trust assets. And his previous children objected to that because they were going to be the beneficiary of this trust when she was deceased. And, you know, the court ruled that you cannot use trust assets to pay off a probate assets. So, you know, that's something that could have been solved by simply changing the ownership of this home to the name of the trust. And they did
so if they had done that, that money would have been locked away from probate money. Like, that money can be used for other things, right?
So if they had put the probate asset, which is the house, mm-hmm. into the trust, then she could have paid off the mortgage with trust money. But because it was a probate asset, she couldn't use the trust money to pay for that.
Okay.
And that's pretty established law. I mean, and that was a slam dunk affirmation by the appeals court. But it's, you know, this is that example that we hear about, you know, where there's a widow or a widower getting thrown out of their house. So she can't afford to pay the mortgage with her own income. She can't access the trust assets to pay that mortgage. So, you know, she's probably going to have to get rid of that house.
Can you design a trust that would make sure that that wouldn't happen, where there could be some income coming into her?
Well, yeah, that's also not the most perfectly drafted trust. We'll leave it at that. So, but yeah, you could tell there was a flaw.
Okay. If someone's listening right now and they have a trust and they're wondering, oh no, should I double check that my house is in the trust name? That would be a yes, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you guys do that at Heggy Law right at the initial, like as part of building the trust, you also do that part too?
That's a big part of it. We have, you know, three buckets we're mostly concerned with: real estate, retirement assets, and non-retirement assets. And you can solve real estate pretty well right off the bat by doing that. We don't need to get into the complexity of the types of deeds that you would file, but, you know, there's a way to 100% give it to the trust. It can never be claimed as part of probate or anything else.
Okay. Before I get to the 815, I want to just like understand the definitions. If I am the person that's going to execute or like in charge of the trust, or I'm named, is it the trustee?
That's right.
And not an executor. An executor's for a will,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah.
But people use them interchangeably. So I'm not judging anyone who gets that wrong, because
right.
I'm sure I've gotten it wrong about 10 times. So the 815 wanted to know, my husband and I need a trust. We don't have any children to execute a trust. Can a lawyer be an executor, or in this case, can the lawyer be a trustee for a trust?
You can name whoever you want. It's generally something an attorney doesn't want to do, particularly if they draft it, just because, you know, somebody could imply that, hey, you know, you drafted this thing that's going to benefit you.
Mm.
Like it seems like self-dealing. But it does happen occasionally. An attorney will do it, or another attorney will, or a family friend. You can name a bank. I generally don't like to name corporations because they're going to charge a fee for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather find a family friend to do it.
Family friend, okay. I wonder, like, when the trustee has to do all this stuff, because there is some work involved, maybe more work for executors than trustees.
For sure.
Okay. Can you, in either of these cases, like, set money aside so that they can, like, get paid in little money for all their hourly work?
Yeah, lots of people do. They'll just set either a flat fee to someone in, you know, exchange for them being your trustee. Or technically, most trusts are written where they include, you know, something along the lines of reasonable fees and whatever is reasonable at that time. And if somebody objects to the fee that the trustee charges, then, you know, they can take that in front of a judge. So to avoid that, you know, maybe naming that amount is a better idea.
630, I may be a little confused by this question. They say, I have a trust. My home is included in the trust, as well as all my accounts with my financial advisor. But my bank accounts are not in the trust. When I went to switch some money in my account, it said I couldn't because it's part of the trust. So it seems to be there's some confusion about whether the bank accounts are in the trust or not. Suffice to say, maybe go back to your original lawyer and ask those questions to them.
It sounds like there's a little mix up in there, but you know, that was a bank account. It's a low amount. It's not enough that's going to trigger a probate. Just making the trust the beneficiary shouldn't impair your ability to move the money, but
that makes sense. So then if you have a checking account, a savings account, instead of changing all of it, all my bills are tied to this thing.
Right.
Let's not do this. I just had to change accounts because my parents' account got hacked and we were all kind of linked from years ago. So I know. And it was a huge pain, but the bank did a great job helping them out, helped me out to change it. It was still a little bit of a pain. But I can just put my trust as the beneficiary. If I were to pass, boom, it goes into the trust. Then the trust has all these rules about what's going to happen with that money, and it's funded that way. That makes sense. Okay. What happens to a vehicle if it's in the name of the deceased and not in the name of the trust?
Right. So, yeah, this comes up a lot. So first off, it's never going to trigger a probate. Well, I shouldn't say never. If your car is worth more than $150,000.
New rule, 150.
Maybe we'll talk about doing something special. But in general, you can use something called a small estate affidavit. There's a lot of great places that will help you, sell that vehicle if you want. You have to present a will and, prove certain facts to them. A car can be, disposed of, after someone passes away fairly easily.
Okay.
And I generally avoid putting them into the trust. You certainly can, but just in dealing with the Secretary of State office, they tend to treat that more like a business vehicle. So you lose a lot of the benefits of like the online benefits that the Secretary has put into place.
Is that where you'd utilize a spillover will where you have the trust and then you also have a will at the same time that says anything that's not mentioned in here goes into the trust?
Exactly. That's one of those assets I generally advise people to keep out of the trust, and that's what technically would happen with it. The will would say, give it to my trust. But I have to say, we usually call that a rollover will.
Oh, not a spillover.
A pour-over will. But a spillover will would probably
No, spill makes it seem like you're going to spill it out of the box. Pouring it in makes it feel like it's going to get in there.
I don't know, John. I think you've broken some new ground here. I like it.
Okay. 630, by the way. We worked with John nearly 2 years ago. We set up a family trust. We added our residence to the trust. We updated our wills. We were very relieved to have that all set up, and John is great. I agree, 630. Way to go. And if you want to find out how great John is, 847-272-7360, heggielaw.com, H-E-G-G-I-E, law.com. This is a specific question, but generally speaking, someone wants to know, if I have a trust, I have a quick claim deed, are we covered to stay out of probate court? I mean, it's impossible without seeing all the details of it, because if you don't have the pour-over, there could still be assets that are not in the trust that could amount to enough to go to probate, right?
Right. I thought we were going to avoid getting into the nitty-gritty of these deeds.
Here
we are. So, yeah, the short answer is yes. Like 99.99% of the time, a quit claim deed is fine for putting something into a trust. But it doesn't technically put something in. It just quits your claim on it. It doesn't physically make it as like a warranty deed would. So I wouldn't worry about it, anybody who's in that situation. But if you came to us, we always use a warranty deed.
Transfer on death instrument, greater than putting your kid's name on the deed, right? Because that's a big issue that people then have on the step-up basis thingy, right?
Exactly. That's what this tool allows you, you know, it's cake and eat it too.
Right, because if you have a $1 million house that you bought for $200,000 in the 60s or 70s or 80s, if you put someone on the name of that deed, they are then going to be paying the capital taxes, what, all the way from the beginning or from when you put them on the deed? It depends, I'm sure. But
right. You probably will claim it from when they put you on the deed, and then the government may have an issue with that, and they're going to say, no, you go back to its original value.
So don't put them on the deed. Let it pass to them, and then they get counted from that moment on.
Yeah, that's far better.
I hope that made sense to people. But we got a lot of questions on here, and we can't get to all of them. Luckily, people can follow up with you directly. Sure. 847-272-7360, heggielaw.com. If someone's nervous and they're feeling overwhelmed by it and they really don't know where to start, I said at the beginning, I know the answer will be number one is to call you, but really it can be, right? Your office can kind of start to alleviate some of the fear and at least just chat with someone in that free consultation, give them a little guidance, whether they go with you or not, you're happy to help out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, your team does great work. What is that call like? Is it just asking them the basics?
Yeah, you know, generally if someone has a plan in place, you know, we want to read it, like we want to see it first. And then, you know, we ask the questions, you know, again, is everything you have listed here? And then what do you want to have? What do you want it to go? What do you want to have happen? And then we can make that happen.
Last question from the 847. Only got a minute left. Is there a benefit between having a family trust versus a husband and wife having individual trusts?
For sure. A massive difference. Generally, when each spouse has a trust, we are drafting that to avoid the Illinois estate tax.
Okay. So it can be used in certain tools.
Yeah, for sure.
847-272-7360 is how you reach John Heggie, heggielaw.com. John, it's good to see you again.
Oh, same for you, John.
Prediction for the Bears game tomorrow?
Big win. That's all I care about.
I love that. That's John Heggie. All right. Well, take care, my friend.